Good morning. Today's daf and sota is Dalet. We're starting today on Gimel Amud Beis. We're going to be about a dozen lines from the bottom of the Amud. We're starting with the words Tanan Hasam. Again, thank the Masoth family for sponsorship of the Masechta. The Masechta is going to be learned with Zechon Ishmael Nechemia ben Avram. And let's get underway. Tanan Hasam, we're going to be starting with a Mishnah. We learned a Mishnah over there. Obviously, over here in the beginning of the Masechta of Sota, so we're introducing ourselves to the basic halachas regarding a Sota. How does a woman get the status of being a Sota? So right now, we're just talking about obtaining the status of being a Sota. So there are two main components to becoming a Sota. There's Kinu and Stira. So the husband's going to warn his wife, and on top of that, she's also going to need to seclude herself. Obviously, none of this is wanted. But nevertheless, if we undergo what is a proper Kinu and a proper Stira, so a warning and a seclusion, so then she now has the status of being a Sota. Despite the fact of the fact that we do not know that she actually was with that man, but there's enough evidence, there's enough data points that would indicate that she does. So even though it's a suffix, but there's a suffix that results in Isser. She now is Usser to her husband. Now you go to the base of Mikdash and she drinks the water, and there's a way to resolve that suffix, but she now, because of that suffix, now is in the status of Isser. That's the major Chiddush of Sota. We've been saying this now over 3 days in a row, which is obviously something to, that's the novelty of the entire Parsha. So with all that stated, Tanan Hasam, so we're going to go take a look at a Mishnah. This Mishnah is coming up later in the Masechta, but over here, as you'll see, it has relevance to our discussion. So Shaya Bedin. In other words, if we were going to make an argument, here's how the argument will look. So when it comes to Eidos HaRishona, now Eidos HaRishona, in a moment we're going to clarify what that is. That's talking about the Eidos of Stira. In other words, that's the Eidos of seclusion. So, it doesn't produce an Isser Olam, and yet you need a minimum of two. Now what does that mean? It doesn't create an Isser Olam? Because, as I just got done saying, in other words, despite the fact that there was seclusion, but it's a resolvable Isser. You go to the Beis Hamikdash, she drinks the water. Assuming she didn't do anything, so then she'll be reunited with her husband. But Eidos Achrona she'asos Isser Olam in addition to Tiskayim Bepachas Mishnayim. Now, Eidos Achrona in this context is referring to Eidei Tumah. Those are the Eidim that actually saw the act of relations between her and her paramour. So there, wouldn't it make sense that I need two Eidim because that Isser is creating an Isser Olam? In other words, the argument is basically like this. It's a really straightforward argument. If the amount of Eidim I need in order to create a temporary Isser is two Eidim, so the amount of Eidim that I need to in order to create a permanent Isser is also going to be two Eidim. That's if we were to have logic and reason, meaning that would be an argument. I guess you call it a kavachomer. So tamalamer ve'edein ba'al kol sheyesh ba'al. So now we're going to go back to what we said already on day one, and that is edein ba'al. Edein ba'al is the source in the Torah that tells us that after kinui and after stira, so what do I need? I only need one aid. See the first daf of our Masechta 2 days ago, where the Gemara elaborated on how this drasha actually works. But, in other words, we have a drasha, to put it simply. So I could have made an argument, that's great, but we have a drasha. The kavacham leidus of Rishona miata. Now, umad eidus achrona she'asros le'yisar olam iskayemus be'edechad, eidus of Rishona she'enosros le'yisar olam, eino dinshi tiskan be'edechad. So now the Gemara says, okay, so now let's reverse engineer. If by Eidos Achrona, if by the Tumah, I don't need two Eidim, and I only need one Eid, and that creates a permanent Isser, so the Eidos Rishona, that's the seclusion Eidos, the Stira Eidos. So there, where it's only creating a temporary Isser. So can't you now argue that you only need one? So Tamalam, Ki Matza Ba'ervas Davar. Ulahalan Omer Apishne Eidim, Apishtosh Eidim, Yakum Davar. Ma Davar Amor Lahalan Apishneim Eidim, Afkan Apishneim. Okay, and the Gemara's answer is we have a drasha. Now, the exact drasha that the Gemara quoted, we're gonna have problems with that. But before we get to those problems, basically the answer is we have a drasha. So, in other words, what the Mishnah did is look. If I were to compare and contrast the Eidos Stira and the Eidos Tumah, so I could make arguments in either direction. Meaning, if I started from Eidos Stira saying that I need two witnesses over there, so then for Eidos Tumah I also need two witnesses. That's the argument. And even though we have an argument, we have a drasha that counts as the argument. And we could have gone in the reverse as well. If by Eidos Tumah I only need one aid, so then by Eidos Stira I would only need one aid, that's the argument, then we have drashas. So when all said and done, what the Mishnah is telling us, we know already because we are now in day 3 of the Masechta, and that's why we know it already. Now the Gemara over here is just going to clean up. On that last point that we said, the Gemara said, you know, we have a drasha. And to which the Gemara says, okay, I'm glad we have a drasha. That wasn't the drasha. The Gemara says, okay, when you go back to Daf Beis and the first Daf of our Masechta, so you remember, how do I know that I need more than one aid for the aid de stira? And according to Rabbi Yeshua, even the aid de kinui. For kinui and stira, I need two aidin for both. And how do I know that? Because of the word ba. And if you recall, if you remember, on day one, we said that only for aid de tuma is it satisfactory to have just but one aid. Anything outside of that, I'm going to say it like Rabbi Yeshua. Anything outside of that, I need two aidim. I need two aidim for the kinu. I need two aidim for the stira. So the Gemara says, and we learned it from the word ba. Not what the Braisa quoted. So the Gemara says, ba v'lo b'kinu, ba v'lo b'stira, me violate. That's really what that's how the Braisa should end it. So achi nami kamar. So tamalam rabba, ba v'lo b'kinu, ba v'lo b'stira. So the Gemara says, okay, what you're going to have to do is you're going to read that into the Braisa. I know the Braisa didn't mention that, but you read it into the Braisa. So then, if that's true, so then what is the Braisa talking about? Meaning, if the whole point of the Braisa is that I have a drasha, and then the Braisa quotes a drasha, but it's not the drasha that we're discussing, so the Gemara says, I'll tell you why. Because that Braisa was discussing a totally separate point altogether. And that is, what if the wife committed adultery, and there was no precipitory kinuin stira? Okay, in other words, it's just a unfortunate, regular act of znus. In other words, she committed adultery, but without any background. No warning, no seclusion. So there, how many witnesses do you need? The answer is unequivocal. You need two witnesses. Oh, Minalan, how do I know that? So the Gemara says, Nemar kan ki matza ba'er v'sdafer v'nemar la'alan apish ne'edim apish losha edim yakum davar. Ma davar mor la'alan be'edim shnayim afkan edim shnayim. So the Gemara says edim shnayim. In other words, we have a drasha that tells us that. Okay, good. So hopefully now, I made this point in the introduction to the Masechta, but let us say it again, because this obviously is a critical point to our Masechta. Our Masechta, when discussing the Sota, is talking about one type of Sota, meaning Sota really is divided into two different categories. There's one type of Sota where, you know, she committed adultery. She was with another man, and witnesses saw that. Okay, and there was no warning, and there was no seclusion. In other words, then that is just simply, she's Mizana. She was involved in the Isra of Eishes Ish under those circumstances. In order for verification for that to have occurred, so then we default to the regular, which is, you need two witnesses. Because like any testimony, you need two witnesses in order to validate. However, our Masechta, when discussing the Sota, is talking about Sota Safek, meaning we don't know. We're not sure what happened. So there was a warning. He issued a warning to her, and there was stira, and then she secluded herself with that man. At that point in time, she's now a sota, but not sotas vadai, sota safek, meaning we don't know what happened, but enough evidence would seem to indicate raglaim ladavar, that she was in fact with that man. She now is usher to her husband, despite the fact that the witnesses themselves do not know what happened in that room, but still she's going to be usher. On that now, the point that we've made already for three consecutive days, but again, just keep hammering the point and we're going to get it. And that is that if after the kinui and after the stira, both of them having valid number of witnesses, again, machlokus, how many that is, but let's assume like Rabbi Yeshua, it's going to be two and two, two for the kinui and two for the stira. Then, and only after then, if one witness saw the actual act itself, so that one witness now is going to create Isser Olam, meaning that there is not going to be an option for her to drink the water. The assumption now is that she was, in fact, with this other man, even though it was only viewed by one witness. Tan Rabbanan. Okay, Adkan. That takes us now to the end of, really, yesterday's daf, yesterday's sugya. And let us begin. The first part of today's daf is all going to be focused on one singular question. Okay, it's going to be a very, very detailed and graphic Gemara regarding the amount of time that we're talking about. We said seclusion. How long does she have to seclude herself with that man? Kidei Tuma. And so for the first part of today's daf, Dalet Amud Aleph is going to all focus on one singular question. How much time is that? Okay, if they measure time the way we did, I think this would be a shorter discussion. However, right back in the day, so the measuring of time was not as scientific as it was now. They just simply didn't have watches. They didn't have second hands, and so back in the day, so when you measure time, right? We're about to hit Pesach, so you talk about how long it takes for flour and water to become chametz. So, okay, good. So they told us how long, right? The Gemara tells us how long. But meanwhile, the Gemara obviously doesn't talk about it in terms of minutes and seconds, because again, that's not how they measure time. They certainly broke up the day into hours, but even then, right, it's not the way you and I measure time. And over here, we're not talking about hours, we're talking about minutes. We're not even talking about minutes, we're talking about seconds over here. So they had various ways in terms of measuring times. Hence, the Gemara's discussion on the first Amud today is going to be a lengthy discussion. And I admit, by the way, it's going to get complicated, only because there are so many opinions that we have to navigate. Right, at a little bit later on this morning, you're going to watch me struggle trying to balance all the different opinions, as the Gemara is going to do it. In other words, this is going to be the challenge of the Amud Aleph of today's daf. There are a lot of opinions that we're going to balance, and I'm telling you right now, I'm going to be throwing out the opinions way too fast for our brains to process it. I'm going to certainly talk about my brain. It will not be able to process all these opinions in the short amount of time that we're going to go through. But okay. But in other words, if you have more time, spend more time with the daf today to really try to navigate and negotiate all these different opinions. That's the Amud Aleph. And the Amud Beis of today's daf is going to be more hashkafa nagarata regarding niyuf, regarding adultery, right? Obviously, it's a bad thing. How bad is it? I mean, aside from answering it in the most obvious way, right? It's gonna destroy a marriage. But aside from that, it's worse than that, which the Gemara and the Amud Beis is gonna be discussing. Okay, so let's go. Tana Rabbanan. So we are starting. We're not starting. In other words, we're well into today's daf, but we're on the very bottom of Gimel Amud Beis. Tana Rabbanan. Ezu Edus Rishona, Edus Tira, Edus Achrona, Zu Edus Tuma. Okay, so in the mission that we were just covering for the last 20 minutes, less, but in the mission that we've been covering, so we discussed Edus Rishona and Edus Achrona. What is that a reference to? So I already told you, but again, you know my position. I looked ahead. In other words, that's my job. My job is to make sure that I'm prepared. So I looked ahead. I knew already. So I told you that Edus Rishona is the Edus of Stira and Edus Achrona is the Edus of Tumah. So the Brice over here points it out. The Kama Shir Stira Kedei Tumah. So how much is the Shir of Stira? In other words, for the Edim to report that she secluded herself with that man. So that means that she and that man, not her husband, were in a room alone together for a certain amount of time. What is that amount of time? So here we go. So the Kamashir Stira, I'm starting at the first word on Dal Amud Aleph. So Kedei Tumah, it's the amount of time that it takes for them to have relations. And that's Kedei Bia. In other words, we're talking about relations. Kedei Haro, we're not even talking about relations where there's full penetration, but rather partial penetration. And Kedei HaKafas Dekel. If we can measure that in time, it's the amount of time that it takes to walk around the average palm tree. Div Rabbi Shmuel, that's the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel. And as the Gemara is going to point out, by the way, there are going to be no less than 7 more opinions in terms of the duration of time. And then the Gemara is going to drop a piece of information that's going to be a little bit revelatory. But I guess we can wait for that. I don't have to give that away right now. Anyway, so Rabbi Shmuel over here now is guiding us through what exactly is this amount of time. So he describes it as, first of all, we're measuring the amount of time that it takes for him to penetrate her, and not even full penetration, but rather partial penetration. Okay, so just a word about Ha'ara. Okay, it comes up numerous times throughout Shas, and whenever we discuss these, right, very sensitive topics, but we all need to know. And that is that the act of Bia, the act of relations, does not require for a full penetration in order to violate the Isur in the Torah, meaning there are many Isuri Arayas in the Torah, and so when a man violates Arayas, it does not have to be where he fully penetrates her, but rather partial penetration. I use the word partial penetration. What is that a reference to? So the Gemara on numerous occasions, we're not going to see in today's daf, but just share with you basic ideas. The Gemara in a number of places has a machlokus exactly what that means, partial penetration. Either it's Nashika Sefer, just simply as a contact between his and hers. So in other words, just at the point of contact that now qualifies legally as Bia. That's one possibility. The other possibility is Achnasas Atara. In other words, the insertion up to the point of the corona. So those are the two opinions in terms of what exactly is Ha'ara. But the point is that Bia does not, in order for the Isser to have been violated, does not require full penetration. It only requires a partial penetration. So when measuring the time that they're alone together in the room, we're talking about that much time in terms of, you don't even need to get to the point of full penetration. We're talking only about a partial penetration. Rabbi Shmuel now gauges that as the amount of time that it takes for a man to walk around a palm tree. Rabbi Eliezer Omer. Okay, and now here begins. In other words, as I mentioned already, there are going to be multiple opinions on this matter, and I know it's going to be hard to keep everything straight, and I'm going to go through this a little too quickly. Rabbi Eliezer Omer Kedemizikas Kosen, and the amount of time that it takes to dilute a cup of wine. Back in the day, that's how they drank their wine, diluted. Rabbi Yeshua Omer Kedelishtosa. Rabbi Yeshua says it's the amount of time that it takes to drink it. Benazir Omer Kedelitzos Beitza, the amount of time it takes to roast an egg. Rabbi Akiva Omer Kedelagoma, the amount of time that it takes to eat a roasted egg. Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra, Omer Kedei Ligmo Shlosh Beitzim Zu Achazu. According to Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra, the amount of time that it takes to eat three eggs consecutively. Rabbi Elazar ben Yirmiya, Omer Kedei Likshur Gardei Nima. Let's say you're doing a stitch and it takes the amount of time that it takes to stitch it was one stitch that tore. Chanin bar Pinchas Amar Kedei Shetoshi Yad Latoch Pia Latoch Litol Kisem. According to Chanin ben Pinchas, the amount of time that it takes her to pick out something from her teeth, that's not euphemistic. In other words, that just literally means the amount of time she has something in her tooth and the amount of time it takes her to get it out. So Plimo Amar Kedei Shetoshi Yad Litol Kikar. According to Plimo, the amount of time that it takes for her to reach into the basket to take out bread. Again, not a euphemism. All we're doing is that we're looking to try to measure a unit of time. And so these tanaim are basically all pointing to various actions and activities that, for the most part, could be standardized. And based on the amount of time that it takes to do any one of the above actions that we just described, that's the amount of time that we're describing. So va'afa pishen ra'i ladavar zech ladavar. Now on this last position of Plimo, the Gemara has a zech ladavar, a remez. Meaning, where do I see it? You turn to a pasuk in Mishlei, sixth perek. Ki ba'ad b'isha, ki ba'ad isha zona, ad kikar lachem. So, isha zona, ad kikar lachem. Numerous times throughout Tanakh, there is a connection between bread and having some sort of illicit act. But meanwhile, there is a remez over here in the parsha that compares the two. And so, over here, based on this remez, you can now remind ourselves that this position of Plimo, that when you reach into the basket in order to take bread, that is going to be the shear. Okay. V'chol hani lamali, so tzricha. Now, we are going back. There's a lengthy Rashi over here. Rashi does a fantastic job. He always does. But he does a fantastic job in terms of parsing exactly what I would have thought and why do I need it. In other words, if you go back to the very beginning, so v'kamahu shear stira. I mean, look at that first line. I'm not going to reread it again, obviously, but if you look at that first line, we seem to be whittling down, right? Stira, tuma, bia, ha'ara, hakafas deko. Meaning, right, we're just expressing the first viewpoint of Rebbe Shmuel. So what we seem to be doing is just whittling it down. And the Gemara just explains it. And again, see Rashi over here, I'm not going to go through it inside, but see Rashi over here, who does a magnificent job just really explaining what I would have included and what I needed to whittle down. So if we would have said kidei tuma, I would have thought that it would have been not just the act of relations, but the amount of time that it also would take him to seduce her. In other words, that's also part and parcel of the seclusion time. So kamashmalan kidei bia. So that's why we went from the seclusion to tuma to bia. Because bia, in other words, we're just measuring the time it takes to have relations. V'itana kidei bia hava amina kidei gemar bia. Now, had it said bia, I would have thought, okay, but in other words, it's a full act with full penetration. Kamashman kidei ha'ara. So now, we're not that, but just ha'ara. V'i ashmina kidei ha'ara. Now, if we would have just started over there, kidei ha'ara, so avimina kidei ha'ara v'artusa, I would have thought, okay, partial penetration, but also including the time for seduction. So kamashmalan kidei tuma. So that's why it says kidei tuma, so that we know that we're talking about only the act of bia itself. V'kama kidei ha'ara, kidei ha'kafas dekel. And How much time are we talking about? So it's the amount of time of hakafas deko, the amount of time that it takes to walk around the palm tree. Okay. So in other words, the Braisa is a little bit wordy, but as the Gemara just got done explaining, in other words, the Braisa wants to make sure that we totally understand that what we're measuring over here is just the act of bia by itself. None of the preparatory, I mean seduction time, that's not included in the shear. And even as we talk about bia, we're only talking about hara, we're not talking about gemar bia. Okay. So, kamashir astira. I'm sorry. Uriminu. Okay. So, Over here now, so in addition to having learned one brisa with many different positions, so here now we're learning a second brisa, and so this is where it's going to get even more complicated, because not only do we have one brisa that we have to navigate through, but we have a second brisa, and as the Gemara is going to point out, there are numerous contradictions between the two brisas, and the Gemara is going to be spending the rest of the Amud Aleph today trying to iron out those differences. Oriminu the Vinistera Vikamashir Stira Lo Shamanu. Kshuamar Vihinidma Haviamar Kide Tuma. Okay, so the amount of time is Kide Tuma. Okay, that's the amount of time. Now Kide Bia, which is Kide Ara, Kide Chazaras Dekel, Divir Rabbi Eliezer. So over here in the Braisa, it's Kide Ara, which is Chazaras Dekel. Okay, now already, again, if you're keeping up, and it's hard, but if you're keeping up now, so this first viewpoint in the second Braisa is not Rabbi Shmuel, it's Rabbi Eliezer. And he's using a term similar to what we heard in the first brisa, but it's not the same. In the first brisa, what we heard was a kafas dekel, and here we're hearing chazaras dekel. I'll give it away. It's not the same. It's not the same time. It's not the same shear of time. Okay, the Gemara is going to clarify that just in a moment. Rabbi Yeshua Merkidei Mezigas Kos, according to Rabbi Yeshua, it's the amount of time to dilute a cup of wine, and Ben-Azi Merkidei Lishtoso, according to Ben-Azi, the amount of time to drink it, Rabbi Kiva Merkidei Litzos Besa, the amount of time to roast an egg, Rabbi Yehuda Ben Becerra Merkidei Ligoma, the amount of time that it takes to ingest that egg, that roasted egg. Okay, so what do we have now between these two brisos? So we got a lot of what seems to be inconsistencies, and now the Gemara is going to do a lot of cleanup now, in terms of trying to get the two brises in somewhat of an agreement with one another. So So the Gemara over here telegraphing its punch. You know, hakafas deko, that we heard in the first brisa. Chazaras deko, we heard that in the second brisa. Right now, we think it's the same thing. Okay, right, spoiler alert. It's not the same thing, but right now we think it's the same thing. So, Now the Gemara makes another observation, which is that in Brisa number one, so we heard it from Rabbi Yishmael, this Hakafas Dekel, and we know Rabbi Eliezer argued on Rabbi Yishmael. And Rabbi Yishmael described it as Mezigas Kos. That was in Brisa number one. And Hacha, now in Brisa number two, Amar Rabbi Eliezer Kedei Chazaras Dekel. Rabbi Eliezer now, first of all, saying something what sounds similar to Rabbi Yishmael, but we know he argues with him in the first brisa. It can't be the same thing. And on top of that also, we'll just say it out. It's another obvious point, and that is that if I compare and contrast Rabbi Eliezer of the first brisa and Rabbi Eliezer of the second brisa, it's not the same thing. Okay, so Amar Abaye, Hakafa Bregel, and Chazar Beruach. So, okay, so what we knew, but the Gemara now spells it out, and that is Hakafa and Chazar are not the same thing. Hakafa's Bregel is the amount of time that it takes to walk around a palm tree. That's what we said in the first brisa. We're going to stick by that shear, whatever that time is. You'll notice, by the way, over the course of the entire daf today, I'm not going to even suggest what that time is because I don't know, but it doesn't matter. In other words, all I know is that there are different time measurements, and the Gemara just wants to make shalom. Obviously, there's disagreement in terms of what the times are, but at least keep everyone consistent with their own position. So as far as Rabbi Shmuel is concerned, like we said, the amount of time it takes to walk around a tree. And chazara beruach. And when we're talking about the tree returning, we're talking about beruach, meaning it's windy outside. And what happens is that the branch is being pushed down. And now we're talking about the time it takes for the branch to be pushed down and to return back to its spot. And by Rav Ashi, and now the Gemara says, good. Now that we're describing this time measurement, so the Gemara says, look, there's a couple of variables over here. Can we try to at least pinpoint what we're talking about? So Chazar Baruch Yechid Azav Ahadar Asi Odim Yechid Azav Asiv Ahadar Kai Beduchte. So do we mean as follows? In other words, when you see a branch being bent and returning back to its spot, are we talking about just simply it's being bent and returning back to a spot? That's one possibility, or no? In other words, we also know that when it's returned back to a spot, it waves back and forth a little bit before it totally settles. Are we talking about that kind of time unit? The Gemara says, okay, teku. Great question. Let's move on. Okay, so even though we're going to get a lot of that this morning, even though now we understand the difference between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Eliezer, we don't know exactly the time measurement of Rabbi Eliezer. Okay, and now, how some? Am Rabbi Eliezer kedei mizikas kos, hacha kedei chazaras deko, idvi yidichat shirahu. So the Gemara now makes another observation. We saw this one coming. Rabbi Eliezer in Braisa number one says the amount of time it takes to dilute a cup of wine, And over here in Braisa number two, it says the amount of time for the branch to bend and go back. So we're assuming that it's the same Rabbi Eliezer trying to give the same time unit, just using two different ways to measure the same time unit. Idi v'idi chachi urahu. Good. So now the Gemara is bothered because of Rabbi Yoshua. Meaning, in Braisa number one, Rabbi Yoshua says the amount of time that it takes to drink a cup of wine. And in Braisa number two, it's mezigas kos, the amount of time to dilute. So, eimam kedei limzog vilishtos. So what we then have to do in order to make shalom between Rabbi Yoshua is that we're going to basically have to take the braces and combine them, put them together. So in other words, it's actually the two activities. Now, by looking at either braces by themselves, I wouldn't have known that. Okay, fine. So in other words, that's why you have to take the two braces, put them together in order to get to the correct understanding of Rabbi Yeshua. The Gemara says, okay, how about going back to another suggestion, which is maybe they are independent of one another, and it's just two different ways to measure the same time unit. So the Gemara says, Imkein Hein Rabbi Eliezer. The Gemara says, no, that can't be. Because then what's going to end up happening is that if it's Rabbi Yeshua talking about Mezigas Kos by itself, so then Rabbi Yeshua is saying the same thing as Rabbi Eliezer. And we know that can't be because Rabbi Yeshua argues with Rabbi Eliezer. So it must be that Rabbi Yeshua is saying a new shear, okay, and there's a stira between the two brises. So the best solution would be is basically saying that according to Rabbi Yeshua, it's not this or this, but it's this and this. Okay. So the Gemara says, okay, once again, what we seem to have is a stira between Ben Azai and Braisa number one. He described it as the amount of time it takes to roast an egg. And Braisa number two, he talks about drinking a cup of wine, a diluted cup of wine. So so the Gemara says, that's fine. In other words, that could be describing just simply one shear. Ha'as amam Rabbi Akiva. I told you, we're going through this way too fast. But, okay. But everyone understands what we're trying to accomplish over here. That part's easy. The harder part is just to sit there and just navigate through every opinion. But okay, fine. Ha'as amam Rabbi Akiva kedei legom a. We're talking about the ingesting of a roasted egg. That was in Braisa number one, and in Braisa number two, ha'chamar kidei litzlos besa. We're talking about the roasting of the egg, ema kidei litzlos besa lugama. So the Gemara says, okay, so for Rabbi Akiva, it's not this or this, it's this and this. In other words, the roasting of the egg and the ingesting, and the ingesting of the egg. V'leimi idividi chachiruhu. Again, why don't we say it's this or this, and it's just two different ways to arrive at the same shear. So imkein hainu benaze, the Gemara says no, because that can't be. Because then Rabbi Akiva would be saying the same thing as benaze, and we know they argue with one another, so it must be that Rabbi Akiva is giving a different shear, and anyway we have two braces having somewhat of a discrepancy, so the best way to resolve all of our issues is just simply to say that Rabbi Akiva is talking about a different shear, and that is going to be this and this. Okay. Hasam, I'm reviewed a member, say we're almost done. Almost. With the Amud Aleph. According to Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra, the amount of time that it takes to ingest three eggs, one after the other, and hachamar kedei lig oma. Presumably, that's a reference to swallowing one egg. Obviously, that's a discrepancy. Lidvarav de Rabbi Akiva kamar. So what he was saying, what Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra was saying in the first brisa is that I'm directing my comment to Rabbi Akiva. Because according to Rabbi Akiva, it's Lia Ugemia, roasting and ingesting. And by the way, that's our updated understanding of Rabbi Akiva. So to that position, Rabbi Akiva, Ema, Shir Gemila Chuda, Kede Ligmoa, Shosh Beitzim Zuachazu, Dahainu Tzlia Ugemia. So it is Gemia by itself, but specifically the ingesting of three eggs consecutively, which is equivalent to Tzlia Ugemia of Rabbi Akiva. Almost. Rabbi Elazar ben Yirmiyah Amar Kedei Sheikshar Gardinima. You have your weaving, and one of the strings snapped, and you want to put it back together again. You want to tie it back together again. So by Rav Ashi de Mirchoko de Mekarev, how far apart is it? How close was it to one another? In other words, in order to have a standardized look at this time unit, so I need to know where these strings were in proximity to one another, teku? And the Gemara says, that's an excellent point, and I don't know. And Chanim ben Pinchas Amar Kedei Shetoshi Yad Alatoch Pialetol Kisem by Rav Ashi de Mahadek Odala Mahadek Teku. Again, now, as we're trying to give a measurement of time, and we're talking about the position of Chanin ben Pinchas, right? Taking a toothpick and dislodging something that's stuck in your tooth. What is it stuck really well in your tooth? Is it not so stuck in your tooth? Meaning, again, over there, there's too much variable. And we're trying to give a standardized time. And the Gemara says, that's a great point. Teku. Okay. We'll leave that question also open-ended. Plimo Omer, back to the first Braisa, the position of Plimo, is Kidei Shetoshi Yadal Asal Litol Kikar. The amount of time that it takes to reach your hand into a basket to take out a loaf of bread. Again, not euphemistic. In other words, we're giving a time measurement over here. So literally, putting your hand in the basket in order to take out a piece of bread. Even there, the Gemara says that time measurement is also not standardized, as there's also room for a lot of variability over there. So the mehadik, oh, the lo mehadik. Is it stuck in the basket or is it not stuck in the basket? That obviously will create variation in terms of how much time it will take her to get it out. B'chadatel batika, what kind of basket are we talking about? A new basket or an old basket? You buy a brand new basket. Okay, I know none of us are buying wicker baskets regularly, but you buy a brand new wicker basket, and what's going to end up happening is that the edges are not yet smooth. In other words, and so your hand and the bread's going to get caught on the wicker that's still coming out. On the other hand, a used wicker basket, so just because of usage, so it's just going to be much easier to slide things in and out of the basket. So what kind of basket are we talking about? And bechamim or bekrira, and the bread itself, is the bread hot or is the bread cold? And the way Rashi describes it, if the bread is hot, so it's going to slip out of your hands. It's going to take more time. If it's cold, on the other hand, so then it's going to come out much easier. You'll have much easier time to handle it. Okay? And bidechiti or bidesare, and other variables to take into consideration. As we now are on the Amud Beis of today's daf, are we talking about wheat or are we talking about barley? So wheat is a much smoother bread. I am following Rashi's lead over here. All right, this is, you know, left to my own devices, I simply wouldn't know, but Rashi tells us that wheat is a smoother bread, and because now it's smoother, so it's harder to handle. On the other hand, barley, which, you know, it's rougher, it's easier to handle, easier to get out. And finally, berechicha o bakushe, and we're talking about bread that was made from a loose dough, or from a thick dough. Once again, taking Rashi's lead over here, if it's rechicha, if it is a loose dough, so it's gonna slip out of your hands, as opposed to whether it's a thick dough, so then it's gonna be easier to handle. Okay, all that was just now on the position of plimo, teku. The Gemara leaves all those questions unresolved. So, that was a long amud aleph.
If the Chacham had a clock, hundreds of years of Talmud would have been saved, because all the discussion, arguing the timing, it would have been saved. But they did have a sense of time for the Rosh Chodesh. You know, they have units for hours and
yes,
1080 halakot per
minute. Right, correct.
So why didn't they come up with a unit and say, you know, they have the ability to come with a finite time.
I made a similar comment earlier. In other words, their measurement of time was, in other words, there are occasions where they measure times with the kind of precision you're describing over there. They knew about hours, and they knew how to break up an hour, and each hour was broken up into 1,080 chalakim, and certainly they knew it. And why couldn't they just give a simple time measurement over here? And clearly over here, they're trying to give a standard measure of time. So why are they using, you know, these metaphors, right? Which, as the Gemara itself now is critical of, in other words, there's a lot of variability within the metaphors that each one of them give. And so it makes it harder. Okay. No great answers. Meaning, but clearly, that's what happened.
Depends on what time of year.
Also, right, the hours, right. David points out, which is absolutely correct. Meaning, even their hours now, in other words, the solstices are going to give us two totally different hours. And so when you break up, you know, a winter hour into 1,080 chalakim, it's not going to be, you know, standardized the way you and I measure time. Okay. Okay. Anyway, let's go back. Now I foreshadowed this piece of information at the beginning of today's daf, but this is going to be it's gonna be a little bit shocking. If you haven't seen the daf yet today, and this is the first time you're hearing it, so this is gonna be a little bit shocking. But okay, the Gemara says it, and so and my job is to report. So the Amar Rav Yosef bar Yosef, Amar Rav Yochanan, kol echad ve'echad ba'atzmo shiur. So each one is giving a shiur of the amount of time that it takes to have tama. In other words, the amount of time to have relations. And again, when we talk about relations, we're not even talking about Gemar Bia. We're just talking about Ha'ara. And how is each one of them measuring it based on their own experiences? And so, okay. And granted, by the way, this seems to be somewhat immodest. In other words, that based on their own experiences, but to be quite frankly and honest, meaning how do people know this information? Meaning, Rachmanis, we live in a time where, you know, for us, unfortunately, you know, this is presented to us. In other words, but back then, though, even in their living, obviously there was a lot of immodesty going on back then. Nothing's new, but still, in other words, the way they're going to be measuring these time units is based on their own experiences, and each one is providing their own experiences. Okay, the Gemara has follow-up questions, by the way. I have so many more follow-up questions than the Gemara has in terms of just my basic lack of understanding. The one thing that bothers me, I'm not sure. Now is the time to express it, but it's a sincere question, and that is that if they're basing on their own experiences, and each one of them is hearing the other, in that there are now eight different time measurements, so then they don't come to the realization that this is not a objective time measurement, and it is subjective, meaning each one is presenting their own, you know, their own. So can't they then arrive at the conclusion that this is not something which is standardized? In other words.
Didn't the Gemara say that Benzoma was never married?
Well, that's the Gemara's question. You're right. You're good. You successfully predicted what the Gemara is going to ask. I'm just bothered by a simple question of why don't they just realize that, hey, this is not objective. This is subjective based on the person, based on the people, based on the couple. And so I don't understand why it is. And then everyone's entrenched in their own position. That's my own question. But be that as it may, the Gemara itself has the Gemara's follow-up question, Ben, exactly as you asked. So v'ha'ika Benazir de lo nasif. So the Gemara says, okay, Benazir never got married. So famously, the Gemara in Yevamos describes Benazir that he fell in love. He fell in love with Torah, right? And the Gemara in Yevamos, Daf Samech Gimel, Rashi here quotes it, said that his love affair with Torah was so strong that he just simply did not have time for anything else in his life. Okay, and proper, improper, the Gemara in Yevamos, Samech Gimel, discusses this very issue. But meanwhile, right now we're just going to stay focused on the Gemara's question over here, which is, hey, if you are gauging all this based on your own personal experiences, Benazai, didn't he not have any personal experience? So the Gemara gives a couple of really fascinating answers. So answer number one is he did get married, but in other words, now, what exactly happened to the marriage? I don't know. In other words, the Gemara just simply says over here, Piresh. In other words, they got married, but he wasn't with his wife. Okay. I'm not going to speculate because I simply don't know. In other words, what exactly happened to that marriage? But in other words, answer number one is that he did have some experience in this field. And therefore, he's basing it on his own experiences. That's answer number one. Ibai Samba. Answer number two. May Rabbi Shmuelay. In other words, he had a Masora. And answer number three, by saying Masora Hashem Liyareyav. In other words, when you are a Yare Hashem, when you arrive at a certain point of your Shemayim, so certain things become known to you. Okay, you don't have any personal experience. Okay, you don't have any personal experience, but you tap into Torah and you have you're connected to Das HaMakom, and certain things are just going to simply be made known to you. Okay, so three different answers in terms of. Yeah, okay, right. Okay. It's a difficult question, the difficult answers, but okay, the Gemara is addressing. All right. That takes us really to the end of the first half of today's daf. The second half is not going to be as long, but still, I'm going to break it up to first half, second half. Okay, so in the first half of today's daf, so we have so far only, in other words, as long as we've been going, almost 40 minutes, we've been addressing effectively only but one question. And that is that the time of seclusion, which will now make her usher to her husband, right? You have witnesses see the seclusion, like let's say like Rabbi Yoshua, two witnesses issued the warning in front of two witnesses. That's the kinui. He then I'm sorry. She then was secluded with this man, with said man, for a time period. So now she becomes usher to her husband. So in today's daf, so far, it's only one issue that we discussed. How long does she have to be in that room? The witnesses saw her in that room for a certain amount of time. What is the minimum amount of time? So we know it's kidei tuma. That part's easy. And then the remainder of today's daf so far has been, and well, how long is that period of time? So there are, amongst the tanaim that we saw, eight different opinions. Within those eight different opinions, we had steers between Brisa number one and Brisa number two. We spent time resolving the differences between them. And even within some of the opinions, there are still variability that we had to work out. And for a number of the opinions, we didn't work out that variability, meaning the Gemara just simply said, hey, that's not a standardized time. There are a number of variables to take into consideration, okay? And that's what we did in the first half of today's daf. Part two. Part two is going to be more hashkafic in nature. It's going to be talking about the ills of adultery. Okay, aside from the obvious, which is that it's going to destroy the marriage, but aside from the obvious, the Gemara also speaks out other issues as well. Amar Rav Yitzchak bar Yosef, Amar Rav Yochanan, kol echad ve'echad. No, we did that already. Sorry, Darsh Rav Avira. Okay. We are on Dal Amud Beis, and we're about six lines from the top of the Amud. Darsh Rav Avira, Zimnan Amar Le Mishmei de Rabbi Ami, and Zimnan Amar Le Mishmei de Rabbi Asi. Okay, anyone who eats bread without washing their hands, it's kilo baal isha zona. It's like having illicit relations with isha zona. Let's for the purpose of this drush, let's just simply call it a prostitute. So the and the pasuk in Mishlei, meaning we already heard the pasuk in Mishlei earlier. In other words, earlier, this pasuk in Mishlei was used as a remez, just as a memory tool to help us remember the position of plimo. But now, the Gemara is going to be using it to teach a different halacha, and that is that the failure to wash one's hands is going to be tantamount to engaging in this kind of activity. Amar Rava, hai ba'ad isha zona ad kikar lechem, bi'ad kikar lechem, ad isha zona me ba'ile, and Rava is bothered by a textual problem. If, in fact, the comparison is correct, that the failure to wash hands is like like being with a woman, so then grammatically the pasuk should have been reversed. The pasuk should have been ad kikar lechem ad isha zona. That's how the pasuk should have been written. So Allah merava kol abal isha zona l'sof mevakish kikar lechem. So in terms of what lessons from the pasuk can we learn from Mishlei? It's that baal isha zona, in other words, if a man engages in this kind of activity, being with a prostitute, so l'sof mevakish kikar lechem is going to be looking for bread, i.e. he's going to be in poverty. In other words, it'll lead to poverty. Okay, I would say, first of all, for the obvious reasons. In other words, he's got to pay for the prostitution, right? That would be the most obvious, but probably it runs deeper than that as well. Okay. I'm Reb Zrika, I'm Reb Lazar, call me Zalzom and the Tilas Yadayim. Anyone who is just negligent regarding Tilas Yadayim, so Nekar Min HaOlam is going to be uprooted from this world. Rashi over here, Nekar Min HaOlam, there we are. The overall divrei chachamim. I'm sorry, I'm reading the Rashi. The overall divrei chachamim. Chayv misa dichtiv v'paritz keder yishachenu nachash. The pasuk in Kabbalah says that if your paritz keder, if you make a breach in the fence, so the snake is going to bite you. The Gemara in a number of occasions says that anyone who doesn't listen to the chachamim, in other words, is going to be bitten by the snake. And the Rashi says that that's the intent of our Gemara over here. Tosis is bothered by Rashi over here because we seem to be talking not about the general callousness towards Divrei Chachamim. Over here, we seem to be specifically talking about failure to wash one's hands. You can see the top Tosis over here who's bothered. Our Gemara does not seem to be talking more general, which Tosis agrees it's a correct point, but our Gemara seems to be over here speaking more specifically. Okay, anyway, what comes out over here is that as long as we quoted this pasuk in Mishlei, and we thought it was a reference to the Netilas Yadayim, so the Gemara is going to have a couple of comments regarding Netilas Yadayim. One, Ashkafik we just read, and that is, be careful about Netilas Yadayim. Meaning the Chacham told us that before we eat bread, we have to wash our hands, for reasons which we're going to explain in just a moment. So, but number one, if the Chacham tells us to wash our hands, we wash our hands, it's that simple. Meaning, and if you fail to do so you are neglecting, I'm just going to say it like Rashi. So you're neglecting, you're rejecting Divrei Chachamim, man. Don't do that. meaning the Chachamim are telling us what to do, and part and parcel of halacha is listening to the Chachamim. Okay, so that's all. So number one, a hashkafic point. And number two, as long as we're here, so we get to say a halachic point as well. So, Amar Rabbi Chiya Bar Ashi Amar Rav, Mayim Rishon Tzarech Sheyagbia Yadav Lamala, Mayim Achronim Tzarech Sheyashpil Yadav Lamata. So when it comes to Mayim Rishonim, so what you have to do is Yagbia Yadav Lamala, you raise your hands up. And when it comes to Mayim Achronim, Tzarech Sheyashpil Yadav Lamata, your hands have to go in a downward position. And Tanya Nami Hachi, I'm going to explain it better in just a moment, but let's first read the Braisas. No, tell Yadav Tzarech Sheyagbia Yadav Lamala. When you wash your hands, your fingers should be pointing up, and Shamiyatsu Amayim Chutz LaPerek, because what may end up happening is that water may drip, and you want it to drip down. But now, when I say the word down, I mean with your fingers pointing up, the water dripping down is a good thing. V'yitamus Yadayim. If your fingers are not pointing up and the water is dripping, and the water is going to drip down back to your hands, then that's not good. Again, I'm going to explain it better in just a moment, but let's just first read. And Amar Rabbi Abba Kol Ocha Pas Below Nigov Yadayim. Well, one more halacha, and that is that if you eat bread without first drying your hands, meaning you have to wash your hands, you have to dry your hands. And let's say you fail to dry your hands, Kilo Ocha Lechem Tameh. So it's like you're eating bread which is Tameh. So the Shenemar V'Yamar Hashem Kachi Yochlu Bnei Yisrael is Lachmam Tameh. Okay, the pasuk in Yecheskel describing how the bread is disgusting as a result of the fact that you didn't dry your hands. Okay, the drying of the hands would make the bread wet and disgusting. And the word tummy over here is to be understood as disgusting. That's how Rashi says it. Okay, so now this will take a minute, and I see where we are in time, but it's okay. It's fine. So let's take a moment to explain this a little bit better. Okay, so in today's daf, so we're learning now a couple of halachas of washing your hands. Again, hashkafically, you do it because that's what Chazal tells to do. Halachically, fingers got to be pointing up for the Mayim Rishonim. Fingers have to be pointing down for Mayim Achronim. Why should that be? Okay, so let's take a look together. Rashi, Shemiyatsu Mayim Chutz LaPerek V'yachzu V'yatamu Seyedayim K'dinam M'Maseches Yadayim. So in order to appreciate and understand this, so we have to be conversant in a Mishnah in Yadayim. Rashi, I'm reading the Rashi, right? We're going to read the entire Rashi over here because it really will facilitate understanding. So, Shetzarch li tenamayim al yadav shnei pamim. Now, what you have to do is the following. You have to run water over your hands twice. Okay. Let me give just a little bit of background to understand this a little bit better. Our hands are tummy. Now, when I say our hands are tummy, in other words, from a default position, without knowing where our hands have been, without guarding our hands, so we have to assume that our hands touched it touched dirty places, and perhaps it also touched some as well. And so therefore, as a gzeirah derabanan, once we have taken our focus away from our hands, so our hands now are rabbinically tameh. It's a tumah derabanan, it's not a tumah daraisa. You've heard me say this before because it's correct. In other words, min ha-Torah, there's no such thing as parts of your body being tameh. The way tumah works is it's all or nothing. Are your entire body is tameh, or none of your body is tameh? The idea that your hands are tameh, that's a tumah derabanan. Okay, but still, in other words, it's a tumah derabanan. How to remove the tumah derabanan? That's what we're learning right now. So what you have to do now is that you have to take revius mayim, right, a quarter log of water, which by the way is not a lot. So you have to take revius mayim and run it over your hands, not once but twice. That's the Mishnah in Yadayim. So now we read the Rashi. Shetarchli tenamayim al yadav shnei pamim. Arishonim mitarim es yadayim. Now running it once over your hands. So what does that do? So that removes the tumah. Okay. In other words, this is how rabbinic tumah works, and that is that by taking water from a cup and reverse of water and running it over your hands, that removes the tumah. Okay. But hashniyim mitarim es amayim hatovchim al yadav shenidmu b'tchilas machmas yadayim. But in other words, although now your hands are tahor, but there is still now going to be residual water from that first rinsing. So, and that residual water now is going to be tameh. And again, this is how tumah operates. In other words, your hands came into contact with the water, so the water now is, in fact, tameh. So what you want to do is you want to remove that water, the shneim. The shneim now are going to be removing that water. Now, as far as this tumah derabanan, it goes until what point? Until the perek, until the joint. Okay? As you can imagine, by the way, there are multiple joints on your hands. Which joints are we talking about? You guessed correctly. It's a machlokas. It's a machlokas. Exactly. Which joints are we talking about? Are we talking about basically where your fingers and hands meet? That was imprecise.
The knuckles.
Knuckles. Thank you. So we're describing the knuckles. That's one area, or a joint could be even the wrist. Okay. So it's not clear. In other words, we know it's not a perek, but the definition of perek is subject to machlokas. Klamar min aperek lamata gazur alam liyoshnios. Uposos is a truma. So in other words, min aperek ulemata. Okay. And I get to say this. All right. People here know I know this already, but we're talking about from the joint and distal. So that's lamata. So from the joint and distal, so that is the tuma de rabbanan. And your hand is going to have the status of a sheni. Now, what does the sheni do? So we all know. So a sheni is posel es hatruma. So when you take your hands now that were unwashed and you touch truma with it, so you disqualify truma mid de rabbanan. Okay, we also know that the chachamim had everybody wash their hands, even though you and I are not eating truma, you and I are eating chulin, but still. Once there's a requirement for a kohanim to wash for truma, so therefore the chachamim required all of us to wash our hands, even though we're eating chulin. So umitaros benetila ad aperek tzarech netila, and so therefore what you do now is that you wash your hands, and in doing so you're removing this tuma derabanan. So natos rishonim vesashnim ad aperek vechazul liyad taharim sharei tiaru shnim as rishonim. So once you ran your second rinsing over the first, so now you're good. Now tells Rishonim chutz haperek v'asashnim ad haperek v'chazo liyad tmeya. However, the problem, of course, is that if you wash your hands with your first rinsing and your second rinsing did not overlap the first rinsing, so now you run the risk of having some of the residual water from that first go back to your hands. Klamar yatzar Rishonim chutz haperek v'alashnim lo hikpid li tola makum shiatzar Rishonim ela ad haperek kemishpatam v'chazo Rishonim liyad. Then what's going to end up happening is that first waters are going to go back to your hand if you're not positioning your hand correctly, and that's why your hands are going to become tame again. So that's why if you keep your fingers in an up position, so that mayim rishonim now is going to head downward. And therefore, you don't have to worry now if, in fact, your shniim did not cover all the rishonim. Okay. I did that quickly, I admit. But, in other words, a basic understanding of the halachas of washing your hands and this requirement of keeping your fingers up. For the mayim achronim, by the way, Rashi over here points out, this I'll do outside, Rashi points out that your finger is going to be in downward position because the purpose of washing your hands after you eat has nothing to do with tumah tahara, it has to do with getting schmutz off your hands. Okay, the Gemara describes that schmutz as melch sedomis, right, sodomite salt, but in other words, it's a different purpose altogether. It's not tumah tahara, it's to remove schmutz. Okay, Tosos, a number of places discusses and describes this idea that nowadays we don't do mayim achronim, but that's not everyone's position. That's just Tosus's position. Anyway, I'm going to be doing a little bit more Gemara today. If you have to go, I totally understand, but I'm here for a little bit more. So, okay, a little bit more for today. I don't want to fall behind. Tanya Namiach, we did that as well. Hold on one. Okay, hold on one second. I will come back. Okay, just give me a moment. Let me just go a little bit further, and then by far and away, stay, and I'll be able to answer, or I'll attempt to answer. My ve'eshes nefesh yikara tatzud. Okay, we're back into the Gemara now, and we've been quoting this pasuk in Mishlei, Perek Vav, right? Ki ba'ad isha zonah kikar lechem. Right, that pasuk has gotten a lot of airtime in today's dafen, and so the Gemara now says, okay, now let's go to the end of that pasuk. The pasuk ends with the words, Eishes ish nefesh yikara tatzud. Now, when it comes to a married woman, she will ensnare a nefesh yikara. So the Gemara says, okay, what's pshat over there? So Amar Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, kol adam sheish bo gasas ruach, lebesof nechshal beishes ish. Shenemar veishes ish nefesh yikara tatzud. If a person's arrogant, what he's going to end up doing is he's going to end up being ensnared in the act of adultery. So Amar Rava Hai Nefesh Yikara Nefesh Gvoa Mi Baile. So Rava doesn't like that pshat because really what the pasuk should be saying is Nefesh Nefesh Gvoa. So He Tatsud Mi Baile. And also grammatically, the pasuk should be reading, she will entrap and ensnare him. So Rava does not like that interpretation. In other words, he may not disagree with the point, but that's not what the pasuk is coming to teach me. So Rava says a different interpretation altogether, and that is that if you are involved in the act of adultery, right? Remember yesterday's daf? It was what a statement that the Gemara made yesterday, which is that, you know, when a woman is involved in adultery, it destroys the house, but not for a man, right? That's what we saw in yesterday's daf. Today's daf, I said this yesterday, but now I get to reinforce it with what we're learning right now. The Gemara yesterday was not saying it's okay for the man, right? That's not what the Gemara is saying. All the Gemara was saying is in terms of its destructive forces vis-a-vis the house, it's more apparent when the woman's involved because she's the Akaris Abayis, right? We said that yesterday and I stay by that. In fact, in today's daf, we're learning, you know, a man is involved in adultery. So you know what? And now we get to say over what Rav is teaching us, which is that afilu lamatar dechsev bayikari bimlinim. Let's say the person is fluent in Torah. He's a Talmud Chacham. And he's like a God, right? Kohen Gadol that goes into the lefnai v'lefnim kodesh kodeshim Yom Kippur. He titzitzen leganim shel gehenim. But meanwhile, if he's involved in the act of adultery, so that's going to drag him into Gehenna. Meaning, there's no zichuyos that he's going to have that's going to help him on Yom HaDin. Okay. To put it simply, it's really bad. And the consequences that he's going to have to endure are really bad. I'm Rav Yochanan Mishum Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, called him Sheish Bo Gasas Ruach, Ilo Ovid Avodas Kochavim. And we did mention arrogance, so the Gemara now is just going to make a number of comments that it often does regarding arrogance. It's like idolatry. Ksivacha Telaiva To Avas Hashem Kol Gevalei V'Ksivasa V'Lo Savi To Eva El Beisecha. Okay, we have the words To Eva clearly in one in Mishlei in reference to arrogance, another in Dvarim in reference to Avodah Zarah. The two points are in fact connected. Rav Yochanan Nidei Amar. Now Rav Yochanan was saying that in the name of the Rashbi. Now Rav Yochanan himself says Amar Kilo Kafra Beikar. That a person who has arrogance, it's like denying the existence of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Shenem Avram Levavecha V'Shachachta Hashem Elokecha. Your heart is going to raise. In other words, you'll be arrogant. You'll forget Hashem, meaning you'll deny Hashem. Rabbi Chama Bar Chanina Amar Kilo Ba'al Kol Arayos. Anyone who has arrogance, it's tantamount to engaging in Arayos. To Ksivacha To Avas Hashem Kol Gvalev Ksivasam Ki Es Kol Toivos Ha'El. Again, a connection of words to Eva. One in arrogance, and the other one in at the end of the parsha of Arayos, the Nachrei Mos. Ula Markilo Banabama. Okay, more about the ills of arrogance. It's like you built a bama. Shenemar chidlu lachem in adam ashen eshama be'apo ki bameh nechshav hu, al tikrei bameh el abama. So again, just using a little bit of classic tools of drasha. So it's like you made a bama. So my yad liyad lo yinakeh. Okay, so we quoted the Pasuk in Mishlei. This is now a different Pasuk in Mishlei. Previously, we were in chapter 6. Now we're in chapter 16. So the Pasuk over here, to avas Hashem kol gvalev, and it ends with the words, yad liyad lo yinake. Amarav, kol sheyesh bo gasas ruach, afilu hiknau lakadosh baruch hu shamayim va'aretz. So even if he praises the Kadosh Baruch Hu, Avram Avinu, like Avram did, Dechseh be'arimos yadi el Hashem el ayon kone shemayim v'aretz, lo yinakeh midin shel gehenem. But still, in other words, displaying that kind of arrogance, he's not going to be spared and saved from gehenem. Kashu debei Rabbi Shila hayad liyad lo yinakeh yadi mi ba'yelei. So the Gemara is not totally taken by this drasha, because if you really wanted to connect it to Avram Avinu, the word by Avram Avinu was Yadi, not Yad. He didn't love the drasha. So Ela Amrei Debei Rav Shila Afilu Kibel Torah Kemoshe Rabbeinu Dichsiv Mi No. So Lo Yinakem Midin Shel Gehenem. So okay, fine. So even if you have Kabbalah Torah, meaning you're fluent in Torah, right? Even to the extent of Moshe Rabbeinu, none of us can be fluent to that extent. But the point is that even if you really are totally engrossed in Torah, but you exhibit arrogance and you really are not careful in checking your ego, so lo yinakeh midin shel gehenem, so you're not going to be spared from Gehenna. Okay, Ad Kan, that takes us to the end of today's daf. Let's quickly recap what was an extraordinarily long daf today, but okay, we made it. Oh, still under an hour. Not for long, but anyway, let's quickly recap our daf today. Okay, so part one of today's daf was first of all, we finished off yesterday's daf going forward with Kal v'chomers of, hey, you know, the AD Tumah, you only need one, and AD Stira, you need two. And if we were to argue, we can argue that for AD Tumah, I need two, and for AD Stira, I only need one. And good, you can make all those arguments, but we have drushas. Okay, that was point number one, an end to yesterday's daf. And then today's daf, really the Amud Aleph into the Amud Beis of today's daf, Kedei Tumah, the shear of Kedei Tumah. The witnesses see her secluding herself with this man she was more not to be with. And for an amount of time, she now is a sota. She is now usher to her husband until she drinks the mesota. So how long a period of seclusion are we talking about? So that was the Amud Aleph of today's daf. Eight to nine giving us different opinions. And the Gemara going through in detail all positions of the Tanaim. Okay, that is part one of today's daf. And part two of today's daf, so a little bit regarding Netilas Yadayim. Okay, we got to learn a little bit of the halachas of Netilas Yadayim, the halacha of keeping your fingers up, and the for Mayim Rishonim, keeping your fingers down for Mayim Achronim. Right, I went through the Rashi inside in terms of why it is that there's this concern and why keeping your fingers up is going to be advantageous and helpful. So we did that. We went through a little bit of the halachas of Tumas Yadayim and Netila being the solution for that Tumas Yadayim. And then, for the remainder of today's daf, we talked about the ills of adultery and the ills of arrogance. Right? They both are bad. How bad are they? So the Gemara spoke about it in the form of drashas.